friends, and welcome back to Ghouls Night In, the spooky chat show with your best ghoul friends. I'm Penny Snark.
And I'm Midge Munster.
So anyone who follows me outside of the pod will know that I am a figurine girly.
Oh my gosh. I'm excited.
Yes, you can see where this is going. So I am into lady head vases, just little tiny porcelain ladies, fancy swans, fruit, disembodied hands, wearing fingernail polish, other such classic pieces. But there is a delightfully dark side in the history of figurines that I delved into, and I'm excited to share with you today, Midge, and all of our friends.
Woo! I'm excited.
So I was first kind of drawn into this. A friend shared an article with me, published on the Order of the Good Death site by Allison C. Meyer, called Victorian Murder Collectibles and Our Enduring Fascination with True Crime.
Amazing.
So yes, when I see a phrase like Victorian murder collectibles, I'm like, this is for me. This is
you
where I gotta
bitch
be.
I'm in. Yeah.
I am in. So her article goes a little bit more into other parts about like true crime, about like broadsheets and pamphlets that circulated about the crimes of the day, which we talked a little bit about in the Jack the Ripper episode.
Yeah.
And I think would be a good episode in general. But what I was intrigued by were the examples she gave of ceramic figurines that were made to commemorate murders and other crimes.
Very nice.
Because, you know, nothing says totally normal and appropriate like a little figurine of a murderer to put on your mantle.
Just a little tchotchke, yeah.
Just a little cute guy. Or maybe like a whole little diorama of the crime, or like a model of the scene of the crime.
A nativity scene of murder.
Exactly. Just completely normal things to put in your house. So obviously, I was like, damn, I gotta know more about this.
Yeah.
And one of the sources that was in this Murder Collectibles article was a Collector's Weekly article by Hunter Oatman Stanford called Murder and Mayhem in Miniature, The Lurid Side of Staffordshire Figurines. That was an interview with a collector and expert named Myra Schoen. And side note, I did go to her website, which is mystaffordshirefigures.com. Very useful. Lots of good images. She's written like books about these figures, and she helps people for free to like try and identify stuff, which is very sweet.
Wow.
But the reason that I wanted to delve into that a little bit is, as a person who knows a little bit about a lot of things,
right,
I'm always obsessed with people who have like an extremely narrow field of interest.
Yeah, I've like devoted their lives to something really oddly specific.
Yes. And even within this specific field, the quote that I have to share from her site is, "Remember, my expertise is earthenware figures of the 1780 to 1840 period."
Of course.
And encourage people to look elsewhere if they need help with other sorts of figurines like this. So, hell yeah. Good for you, Myra.
Wow. To be so knowledgeable about something. Good for you.
Right. Right. To have one thing that you care about and are like, this is going to be my thing. I simply could not imagine.
That's the difference in types of neurodivergency.
Yes.
That's not an ADHD ghoulie. That's
no.
That's the other end of the spectrum.
So these figures that we're talking about are a subset of what are called Staffordshire figures. Hopefully I am pronouncing that in my most British way possible.
Staffordshire, yeah.
So at first I thought that this was like a brand, like, you know, Lefton or something, but it's actually more of a general term for this style of pottery figurine that were produced from 1740 to around 1900 in England. So they were made in a place called Staffordshire Potteries, which was like an area of six towns that was like the center of the pottery industry in England at that time. So they had a lot of access to clay there, which helped, but the real secret is that they also had coal, which you needed to run a kiln.
Oh, sure.
And that made it a place that like a lot of small potteries set up their business. The earliest pottery that was coming out of here was like more simple. And then in the 1770s was when they really started to make these kind of figures, which were these like the glazed earthenware guys that were meant to compete with like a fine porcelain that someone perhaps more wealthy would acquire. So the first figure that is a true crime depiction is from the 1790s called The Assassination of Marat by Charlotte Corday of Caen in Normandy, 1793, which of course depicts the death of Marat, the famous French revolutionary thinker who was stabbed to death in his bathtub. But this figure is not of a bathtub.
Oh, okay. Well, I was about to ask.
Thumbs down for me. I was very excited about this, and I was hoping that it was going to have like Michael's decor vibes. You know how Michael's always right. makes a bathtub.
Like a skeleton in the bath,
For some reason, or they're like, here's a spring bathtub. And I'm like, what is this? What is the vibe that you're going for here?
Your general bath decor?
Right, because, you know, in your bathroom, you need another little bath.
Fun fact, though,
so you don't forget.
I do have to shout out Mr. Michael for making a tub that I was able to put my Lock, Shock, and Barrel figurines in.
Okay, that is very good. That's true.
I needed a bathtub. They didn't come with one. So thanks, Mr. Michael.
That too is a crime. They should have come with a bathtub. You can't be out here selling Lock, Shock, and Barrel figurines with no bathtub.
You know, I would tend to agree, but I don't make the rules. Mr. Disney gave them to me that way.
Right. Yeah. So unfortunately, this figure is just Charlotte holding a knife and a fully dressed man on the ground just being like, don't stab me. So disappointed by that, but still. So as I was doing this research, I was like, I've read about murder collectibles before for this podcast. When did this come up? And I realized that it was while I was
Dollhouse episode.
It was the Human Skin Books episode.
Oh, whoa. Big throwback.
Right. Which actually, side note, mid-episode update, they just this week, Harvard announced that they removed the human skin binding from one of their books and are working with France to like figure out the best way to like lay the remains to rest.
Interesting.
So, update in the human skin book field this week. Very exciting. And so I was like, oh man, it's all coming together.
Get your hot news right here on Ghoul's Eye. Yes.
So the murder that was part of this and that I thought of is called the Red Barn Murder. So there was this guy, William Corder, and he was getting down with a lady named Maria Martin, and they had like a child and everything, and she was like, we should get married. And he was like, sure. Let's meet at my barn and we'll elope together. And she was like, sweet. And then she was never seen again.
Gave her the old corpse bride technique.
Gave her the full corpse bride. And he came back to town and was like, no, yeah, she's totally living nearby. She's fine. She just can't come home right now, but she's definitely alive. and spoiler alert, this was not true.
Sure.
This was not true. She was not fine or alive. And like a year later, her mom. So this, of course, you know, this is an olden time story. So there's all sorts of stuff. But apparently her mom was like, I had a dream that she's buried under the floor of the Red Barn. And they did, in fact, find her body at the Red Barn.
Mom crazy. Is so me for real.
But the reason that this came up is because he was, you know, convicted of murder. He was sentenced to dissection, which check out the human cadaver episode also, all connecting. But they also took his skin and used it to bind an account about the murder. And they made figurines about it.
Oh my gosh, okay. I remember you talking about that they used like the criminal skin to buy the book.
Crazy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I did see a few different ones of this that are generally like a little man and little woman like standing in front of a red barn, and it says like the Red Barn on the bottom of it. So like it's not just a scene of people by a red barn. This was definitely for like the murder.
The murder TM. Wow.
The murder of the Red Barn murder. And it's interesting because for the most part, like there are a few figures that like actually depict like violence, but for the most part, they're really just like, they look like totally normal little figurines, and it'll just have maybe like a name painted on the base, and it's just like, this is a murderer, and you're like, oh shit.
Like, if you didn't know, you wouldn't know.
Yeah, like if I was at an antique store or something, I would see, you know, this charming little like man by a podium, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'm reading this article, and it's like, this guy killed his landlord, and I'm like, oh,
no. James,
sir. There is one that is, I like that shows a English man being mauled by a tiger. Which was like a depiction of like a famous like hunting accident in India. And I'm like, well, you probably deserve that then, sir.
Yeah,
so
that's what the pane at the bottom just says, like, yeah. Well,
you get what you get. Play stupid games, win stupid prizes, yeah. My man. And so some of these figurines are like three-dimensional, but a lot were actually created with a flat back. So it only is shaped on one side, and then the back goes against like the wall or wherever mm-hmm. we're displaying them, which makes them cheaper. And that was kind of like over the course of time, like they started off being more like, oh, this is like really like going to compete with like fine porcelain type of figurines. And then kind of past the 1840s is when they begin getting a little bit more like more of a mass produced kind of knick-knacky kind of vibe, that they're really going for like, okay, like this is for anybody who wants a little guy to put in your house,
a little murder guy, you know,
this is a little murder guy. So why would someone want a little murder guy?
I was getting ready to ask that exact question. Why?
One might wonder. The answer, so like, as we've talked about in a lot of things, there was definitely kind of like this building fixation on, you know, death and crimes and things at this period in time. You know, us crazy Victorians love some death. But the other reason is like, this was just kind of one of the ways you like participated in pop culture. So other popular figurines of the day would be of like sports stars. So they would make famous like boxers, little things, actors and singers, celebrities. There was, of course, a fabulous bust of Lord Byron. So you could have a nice little Lord Byron to take
home. You're going to have a bisexual icon in your home.
Yes. As well as they would like make representations of like politically important events, like news stories, like big things that were happening. Apart from like, there was also just stuff that you would expect from like collectible pottery, like, oh, here's just like a nice little pastoral scene that like, right. You know, someone in the city would be like, ah, wouldn't it be nice if I had a little lamb and was just doing my thing. But other than that, it was just kind of like, I sort of am thinking of it like how we have like collectible bobbleheads and stuff today. And sometimes they're of weird things, but it's just like, well, this was an exciting
pop figures.
Yes, little pop figures.
It's Funko Pops, but yes. Make it murder.
Exactly. One of the things that kind of connects to that I thought was really interesting from this interview with Myra was just talking about like the lack of visual representation in the period, which mm-hmm. we've talked in other episodes about like how photography really, you know, like revolutionized who was able to actually have like an image of yourself or a loved one, and that right. hadn't been a thing that was accessible to people.
Right.
But something that I didn't even really think about in connection with that was that you wouldn't have images of kind of anything like before some of the advancements in printing that were coming in like this kind of period in like the 19th century, as the figures had kind of been going on for a while, is that a lot of times newspapers didn't even have illustrations.
Right.
So you really did not have a lot of options for any kind of like visual memento of the world around you. And one of the options would be like to have a sweet little figure of something exciting or interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a conversation starter.
Right. Like, I just imagine walking into like a proper Victorian drawing room and being like, oh yes, here's my red barn.
Right.
Here on the mantle. Wasn't that a good time?
Wasn't that crazy? It's easy to like sit here and be like, that's wackadoodle Victorians. But then also like, how many like conventions or things have we seen booths with just like, which I don't agree with this, but just like pick like stuff with pictures of Jeffrey Dahmer on it, oh, or like, yeah. Oh, you yeah. know, I'm like, oh my God, that's so crazy. Who would want that? But like, we're still doing that today in our,
yeah,
you know, in our own ways, which is wild.
We do. And so that was one of the things where like, I wanted to keep this episode really specific, but I mean, I think mm-hmm. There would be an interesting episode to talk about kind of this idea of like crime memorabilia or yeah. murderabilia, as some people call things in general. And as far as these things go, I mean, I would say that like a little figurine is definitely less problematic than,
yeah.
well, that was the other thing, is that that was a big part of this too. So I'll just talk about it now, 'cause we're talking about the Red Barn and like people wanted that. So apparently the barn itself was like torn apart because people would go and grab like souvenirs
pieces
from
of
it.
The barn. Oh,
pieces of the barn and like different parts from the like execution were ceded to different people. So like the hangman got to keep the rope and he like sold it off like inch by inch apparently. And
what?
Right? Yeah. So like people really wanted to have pieces of this, which I mean is definitely still true today. Like there, like you said, yeah. there definitely is a specific subset of people who want to own things like that. But I mean, I think we all understand the urge to like want to have a piece of like a major event.
Sure.
I would have my own qualms about something like a murder, but
right.
you know, people want to have like, well, how many, like you go to when you're a tourist and you're going to like historic places, there are always signs that are just like, stop taking like rocks from here.
Right.
Like
right.
we will not have anything left if you keep taking bits and pieces of our historic place.
Yeah. Stop chiseling pieces off the Blarney Stone.
Right. You can't take a chunk of Stonehenge with you. You gotta leave it here. But I'm just so fascinated by these now, and I have always really loved obviously figurines in general, but like mm-hmm. kind of like modern like quirky interpretations now. Oh shoot, now I don't know, I'm trying to remember her name. There's that artist who does like beheaded like lady figurines, Jessica Harrison.
Oh,
so yeah, highly recommend checking her out. So she takes like she has one series of like porcelain figures where she's like drawn like elaborate tattoos on like these like very delicate cool. lady figures.
Love that.
So of course I love that. But then she also has some that have like more like violent kind of vibes. And it's just such an interesting, it feels like a juxtaposition of
right,
something like
right.
very classic with something that's kind of lurid. And so I think that's why I'm so interested in the fact that like it's actually maybe not as big of a juxtaposition as you think, because
right.
people did make actual historic figurines of creepy things, and they look so normal, but you're like, oh, this is a guy who killed his wife, or you know, these people plotted to do this, and here's a man being mauled by a tiger. So all the classic experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought they were so fascinating. And the term Staffordshire figure, I guess, is kind of a catch-all term. So there were other places that were making similar types of figures. There are part of, you know, a lot of collections and museums. I would definitely love to go see some in real life and experience yeah. it. But yeah, it's definitely interesting to see something that like very much looks like it belongs like in your grandma's like
hutch,
little china
yeah.
cabinet, right. little hutch, and you're like, oh, it's a murderer though.
I'm also mildly like excited because since this came up once already,
yeah.
I did think you were going, this was going to be about Frozen Charlottes, and
oh,
I have yeah. almost brought that like five times. So now I'm like, ooh, we have more porcelain to talk about in the future.
Yes, yes we do. Yeah. It was just very interesting. This one
yeah,
was
I
one
had
where
never
I
heard of this. So I'm excited to learn something
Yeah,
I have no concept of.
I'm excited to share some of these images on our Instagram. So I'll skip ahead and say follow us at Ghouls Night In Pod if you want to see some of these cool figures. If you want to check out the Red Barn and all of those. Yeah, this was one where I was like, oh, should I do like a whole bunch of different kind of like creepy porcelain things? And then I just got deep enough into it that I was like, nah, we'll just stick with these guys and we'll leave the rest to talk about another day if we so choose.
I love that you always bring us the dainty spookies, like the dollhouses and the porcelain figures. Yes.
I love a weird, pretty, feminine, creepy thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. So I just have to say, this is not relevant to anything, but someone, my mom described someone as being big spooky the other day, as in like big into spooky stuff. And
but
my dad, like
kind of big pharma.
And I was just like, oh, that's what they call me. Big spooky.
Big spooky.
I do like big pharma though.
That's like big spookies coming to take our jobs.
All right. Yeah, that is my spooky figurines for the day. Just a little spooky in contrast to the big spooky.
Small spooky.
So if you enjoyed this show, we would love to hear about it. You can leave us a review on iTunes, and that really helps us get seen. But you can also leave comments on Spotify or send us a DM on Instagram if you are not able to leave a review wherever you listen. But Midge has a review to read today.
I do. We've got some fresh hot Apple reviews.
Woo!
This is a 5-star review from Moth Woman. Very exciting.
Nice.
Titled Spooky Little Heart Flutters. Fluttering their little moth wings. From the moment I hear that absolute banger intro tune. Thanks, Mike Franklin. My heart is fluttering with spooky happiness from start to finish with each episode. This sweet little gem of a podcast gives me just what I need to get through the weekday scaries. Let's face it, the entire work week is scary, not just the day leading up to Monday. Thank you, Midge and Penny.
Oh, thank you, Moth Woman.
Thank you, Moth Woman. We love your work.
Yes, thank you for taking a break out of, I'm sure, checking out some infrastructure somewhere to
your busy city planner schedule.
And as I said, you can find the podcast on Instagram at Ghouls Night In Pod. And if you are looking for me and some of my own personal little figurines, you can find me at Penny Snark.
And you can find me all over the web at Midge Munster.
And until next time, goodbye.